All right, I'm cutting the intro short. We're getting straight into this one. So, if you go on iTunes, we've got the E next to the podcast for explicit. I think I might have said kicked his ass one time in one of the podcasts. And so I figured, you know what? In future, might as well have the E there. We're going to need it for this episode. So, on Saturday, it was reported by MMA Today that Greg Hardy was going to join Dana White's Contender Series. And it's a fucking load of bullshit. Dana said, I'm not saying you should be welcomed here. MMA Today reported it. I'm saying, I'm a guy who believes if you make a mistake, your life isn't over forever. When you make mistakes, it's all about how you act from there on out. So for anybody who doesn't know who Greg Hardy is, he's a 29-year-old former defensive end, played for the Panthers in the NFL, until 2014. He got suspended for 10 games after being found guilty of domestic abuse against his girlfriend. He's billed right now in MMA as being 6'5", 265 pounds, and he beat his ex-girlfriend. So he got charged, and he was found guilty. On appeal, the charges were dropped, and his suspension ended up, you know, it was 10 games, then it was 10 games, then it was 4 games, because the victim failed to appear in court. If you've ever seen, you know, there's always two sides to every story, but, I mean, you see a great big guy like Greg Hardy. After it happened in 2015, he put out a rap video where, you know, in the video they had guns and strippers, and he called out Tom Brady's wife. Guy hasn't shown much remorse. He's a thug. He's a fucking idiot. And, they're going to let him compete in, the Contender Series. So he's 3-0 as an amateur. He's finished all three fights by TKO, first round TKO, I think. You know, two of the fights were under a minute, and the other fight was a minute and a half. He's going to be fighting Brandon Sales, who's 5-1 as a pro. He's billed as 6'5", 298 pounds on SureDog, so he's definitely going to cut the weight to get to 265, if they're correct. You know, I think this is a terrible decision. He got arrested, I mean, Greg Hardy, in 2016 for possession of cocaine in Dallas, and Dallas was the only team that wanted to give him a shot back in the NFL. And if the guy's not good enough for the NFL and he was a thug, then what's the point of having him in the UFC? You know, I know if let's say he gets a win in the Contender Series, they don't necessarily sign him to a contract. He's not going to automatically go into the UFC heavyweight division and tear it up. But at the same time, it's publicity. It's going to look bad on the UFC. You're looking for a TV deal. I'm sure it'll spike the ratings. And if Fox or ESPN is going to look to pick up the Contender Series and put it on TV and not have it on Fight Pass, it could be in Dana's best interest maybe to bring a sideshow like this. But there's so many more deserving men and women out there who compete in MMA, who train day in and day out, that deserve a shot more than this guy. There's fighters in different organizations that would love to have a shot in the UFC. You watch Contender Series, you see some of the fighters there and the work they go through and how hard they try and please Dana and get into the company, and they fight so well and so hard. They could win 5-6 fights in a row and never get the shot. And it's not fair to people like that a thug like this is going to get a fucking chance at all. I understand second chances are everybody deserves one. But Greg Hardy, after what he did, showed absolutely no remorse. And the NFL doesn't want him. The NFL is one of the premier organizations in North America. They're arguably, you know, basketball is probably the number one growing sport in North America. And you know, hockey's trying to expand in different markets, different cities. They're always looking forward to expansion. The NFL brings in more fans than any of them. There's so much revenue that goes around. Kids all throughout the United States trying to be football players. It's not as big in Canada. I mean, we have the CFL here, and it's a big deal for us. But you know, the NFL and football in general, it's such a big market. And for teams to not want Greg Hardy, safe, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, they took their shot and it didn't really pan out. But if Greg Hardy couldn't make it in the NFL, why would you give him a shot? Like, he fought on an LFA card I saw, but again, it wasn't considered a professional fight, so he's 0-0 as a professional, but it's not the kind of antics that you want. You know, you can ride that Conor publicity train. I know in Embedded, before the Khabib by Kenta fight, they, you know, the still image of Conor with his face and throwing that dolly cart. It was terrible what he did. It shook up Rose Namajunas. It ended the Chiesa fight. It ended the Borg fight. But in the end, you know, you can sell it. CNN covered it. All major news organizations covered it. And it was a shot for the UFC to kind of make a splash. It's not a good one, but any publicity is good publicity, right? But something like this, it's terrible. I haven't seen a single person say, you know what? You put Greg Hardy on Contender Series. Great. Good for you. Good move. I'm sure there's somebody out there, but in my opinion, I think it's a terrible move. It's going to tarnish their brand. It's not going to look good on them. Like, I don't know. I've thought long and hard about it since I found out, you know, late last week. And, I think it's ridiculous. It's a terrible, terrible idea. Definitely not what the UFC needs. And, just if you're unaware, the fight's going to appear on the June 12th episode of that Contender Series. So we'll see what happens. If the fight ends up happening, who knows? I'm sure Brandon Sales is going to gain a lot of fans and a better reputation, and power to him. I mean, 5-1, big guy, and hopefully he's able to do something. We'll see what happens, if there's a fight or if not. So we'll change gears a bit, go over last weekend's fights. Then, as always, on Monday, I'm going to focus on an up-and-coming fighter people might not have heard of. And then we'll preview some of the fights coming up this week and this weekend. And that'll about do us until Friday, when I'll really get in-depth as to the fights that are coming up. So, last weekend, we had UFC Fight Night Lee versus Barboza. It was another stacked card for a fight night. The weekend before was UFC on Fox in Glendale with Gaethje and Poirier. So we look at the main event, Lee and Barboza. If you really get down to the numbers, Lee almost tripled the significant strikes over Barboza, clobbered him in the first round. In the third round, Barboza was able to kind of finally land something significant. He threw one of those patented wheel kicks. It wobbled Lee, but in the end, you know, Lee was able to use his wrestling. And Keith Peterson ended up calling in a doctor in the fifth round. It was a TKO by Dr. Stoppage. Barboza's eye looked pretty nasty there, so it made sense. It was a good call by Peterson. He's a really good referee for sure. You know, Lee's stock definitely rose. He's scheduled for a lot of interviews today, so good for him. It was a good return. You know, he hadn't fought since October of last year when he fought Tony Ferguson. But I don't know where he kind of fits in the title fight contention. Like, there's so many guys at the top. You know, Poirier really poured it on against Gaethje. You still got Tony Ferguson, who was supposed to fight Khabib initially, so I don't know where Lee ranks. I'd say, you know, he probably needs one more big fight until he deserves that title shot, but, you know, today he's going around, and I'm sure he's going to get a lot of good publicity. It's worth noting that he had a hard time making the weight there last week, and he also had a hard time making the weight in his fight against Ferguson, so you never know, that could be something that could pop up again in his next fight. And he agreed to give up 20% of his purse to Barboza after such a big win. You know, it's not really talked about as much, but just something to keep in mind for sure. In our co-main event, Frankie Edgar versus Cub Swanson, Edgar was able to win by decision. So it kind of makes me personally wonder what's next for Cub Swanson. I know he signed a new deal this year. He's got a good record. He's 25-9. But he's lost two in a row, so it kind of puts him in a bit of a tough position. The last time he lost two in a row, he ended up winning four straight fights after that, and he had that great fight against Duho Choi that everybody remembers. So, you know, I don't know what's in the cards for Swanson. He's definitely still in the top 15 for sure, and he'll fight somebody good. Maybe, you know, you give him somebody easier in that top 15, but I mean, he's still up there, right? So never count Cub Swanson out for sure. Fight before that, we had Justin Willis, 6-1, taking on Chase the Vanilla Gorilla Sherman. So Willis was able to bump that 6-1 up to a 7-1 decision win. He's got a really good record for the division for sure, and He got a knockdown and a takedown in the fight, so he could be in line to fight a top 15 guy. It's a weak division, so you never know. He could. A good matchup, I think, would be against Durakimov, who Sherman actually lost to in his fight before. So could be a good fight for Willis, and he's a finisher, so it was kind of surprising to see a decision, but good fight for him. And definitely that heavyweight division, you know, you win, you put two or three good wins together, and you're in the top five. So definitely something to watch for sure. Thiago Santos and David Branch, I definitely made the wrong prediction. I picked Santos to win by KO, and Branch came out throwing in that first round. Was able to throw a hard overhand right, stunned Santos, got him to the ground, and the referee hopped in and called the fight. So it was a feeling out process for sure. You could see Santos with he's almost got kind of like a karate stance, if you will. He's trying to time his kicks, which is what he seems to do in every fight. And Branch was able to kind of push him up against the cage, limit that range, and then threw that overhand and got the win. So Branch in the top 10, who knows what's next for him in the middleweight division. That's another one between middleweight and lightweight. I'm sure everyone agrees that lightweight's definitely the strongest division in the UFC, but middleweight's still stacked as well. So, you know, Branch, who's he going to fight next? Could he fight a Chris Weidman? Who knows? But definitely a really good win for him coming off that loss to Luke Rockhold. Another big fight that was on the card. You had a New Yorker and Aljamain Sterling taking on 15-0 Brett Johns. Johns is now 15-1. So Sterling was able to get the win by decision. He got on top for some of the fight. His ground game looked good. His striking was fluid. It was good. And he took on a great grappler and a submission guy in John. So it was a really good win for Sterling. I'm sure he's going to look for another big fight, a top 15 guy potentially. So good win for him, and definitely a guy to watch in the future. His loss to Moraes in the fight before John's was definitely hard on him, and looking forward to a lot more exciting fights from Sterling. We also had Jim Miller taking on Dan Hooker. Hooker was able to get the win in his fight before Miller against Mark Jacasey by guillotine. And Hooker was actually able to get the knockout in this fight. 3 minutes into the first round, he kneed Jim Miller hard to the head. And it puts Hooker in that lightweight mix. If he wasn't already there, he is definitely today. And I saw that Jim Miller put out a video on Twitter, showed that shiner that he had on his eye, and he required a stitch. So he looked to be all right, and I'm sure we'll see him come back and fight again. But for Hooker, definitely a good win. You beat a guy with that name recognition, and really excited to see what we could see from Hooker in the future. Another fight that I definitely got wrong, and I was really surprised, was Patrick Cummins and Corey Anderson. I looked at Patrick Cummins, you know, Division I wrestler, Penn State, versus Corey Anderson's Division III wrestling skills. I picked Cummins to come out on top. You've seen him in the past really show that wrestling. And his striking is not too bad either. But, gee, his head didn't move off the center line in this fight. His movement didn't look too good. Kind of arced his back forward and just kind of threw punches blindly against Anderson, who looked a lot more technical than I've seen him in his last fights. And he was really able to capitalize. He seemed to win every exchange. He even out-wrestled Patrick Cummins, so I was pretty surprised by that. But, yeah, Anderson able to get the decision win, and your light heavyweight division in the UFC is pretty weak, so it could really raise Anderson's stock quite a bit. Not really sure who he'd fight, and I don't really have much of a prediction on who he'd fight next, but definitely a guy to watch in the light heavyweight division for sure. And for Patrick Cummins, you know, he's 37 years old, but you can see guys with some vintage in that division have seen success. You know, Shogun Ahua, your champs, Daniel Cormier. So there could still be a lot of fight left with Patrick Cummins, and definitely an exciting guy to watch for sure. Most controversial fight on the card, and a fight that I didn't really focus on going in, was Ricky Simone and Merab Dwalishvili. You know, I watched the fight leading up to it. Merab was on the Looking for a Fight series on YouTube, trains out of Longo Serra gym, And we also had Matt Serra being named into the UFC Hall of Fame, so that was pretty good for him, for sure. But fighting Ricky Simon, who was coming from LFA, he was a champ there. Really good record as well. And I had Mara, definitely, he won the first two rounds for sure that fight. Fighting at a high pace, he was throwing some spinning kicks, really pushing Simon. If you look at the striking numbers, they didn't really tell the tale. So you'd really have to watch the fight for sure. But at the end of the third round, if you stop and play, at 56 seconds, Simone sunk in a pretty tight guillotine, had himself on top of Marab, and then just cranked it back. I mean, Marab was caught. Like, he couldn't get out of that guillotine. He started to turn colors. And if you watch, 46 seconds, he looked pretty well unconscious. Wasn't into it. And the referee grabbed his hand. And at that point, he just started to ride the bike on the mat. He was kicking his legs, flailing, and for the remainder of the round, he did that. And in my mind, I thought, well, geez, this is a great way, you know, keep the blood flowing and definitely stay awake and alert. And at the end of the round, the horn sounded, the referee broke it up, and Mero kind of turned around, looked like he said something to the referee, got to his knees, basically looked like he was going to start to get up, and then the doctors ran into the ring and laid him back out. When they laid him out, he definitely didn't look good. His face had obviously turned pretty reddish purple almost, and then, you know, they tended to him. The commissioner came into the ring and delivered instructions to the referee. Mark Goddard was yelling at Bruce Buffer. It got pretty intense. You know, the two announcers, they weren't sure what to think of it. I thought that, you know, it was going to be a decision win for Marab. You know, I thought he won, obviously, the first two rounds. And the third round, Simone had for sure. I mean, he had that guillotine sunk in. And it kind of reminded me of the fight from a week before with Courtney Casey and Michelle Watterson, where, you know, if Watterson didn't get that bell, she was definitely going to have to tap. So what they ended up doing was they called the fight a technical submission win at the end of the third round for Ricky Simone. And on the broadcast, they called it a TKO. So either way, Simone got the win. But yeah, you know, I don't know what to think. I saw a lot of really smart people on Twitter and online explain that you can't get saved by the bell. And if you're out, you're out. But in my opinion, it's at the discretion of the referee in the ring to call the fight. And the referee clearly thought that Marab was still alert and in the fight, and he didn't call it. So I don't really agree with the commissioner coming in and trying to set things right. And I think it was up to the referee for sure. But the commission didn't even adopt the new rules, so it all kind of seemed a little bit backwards to begin with. But definitely an interesting fight. And, you know, Marab's lost his first two in the UFC, but I'm sure they'll keep him around. He's a really exciting fighter and definitely a guy to watch. And, you know, Ricky Simon, you look at his record as well, and he's definitely got a future in the UFC as well. So two guys to watch. And overall, a really exciting event for the UFC. And shame that there's no UFC card this weekend, but we'll preview what else there is as well. So on Friday, we had ONE FC from Manila, and it was Muay Thai, kickboxing, and MMA fights all on the same card. Main event was Andrew Leon against Kevin Bellingon. I picked Bellingon to win, and he actually won by first round TKO. Got on top, the ground and pound was able to get the win. And definitely an exciting card for sure, if you had the chance to watch it, with those three different types of fighting styles, and a really exciting brand as well. You know, we're trying to put a point of focusing on combat sports from around the world, so it's a really important organization and definitely one that that you should take a look at. On Friday, we had LFA 37 from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I took Michael Perez to win the fight against Sid Bice. Bice 7-1, Perez 5-1, and Perez was actually able to get second round TKO. But that fight was kind of overshadowed. That was a flyweight title fight. That fight was overshadowed by 21-year-old Colombian Sabina Mazo, and people are trying to get her into the UFC more or less. She got a five-round decision over Shannon Sinn, won their flyweight title, female flyweight title. She's now 5-0 as a pro. And, you know, that flyweight division in the UFC is pretty thin. We haven't really seen many fights. You know, your champs, Nico Montano. If you go down through, Valentina Shevchenko's, you know, your number one contender. And then below her, you have Roxanne Modafferi, who's 0-2 in the UFC. So it's not an overly strong division for them. So if you could bring in a breath of fresh air like Mazo, you never know what could happen. Really exciting fighter for sure, and definitely somebody to watch. So on Saturday, we had ACB 85 from Rimini, Italy. Main event was Anthony Leone versus Magomed Jinashov. I took Jinashov to win, rather. Leone was able to get the decision win. And then I had highlighted a pretty important fight from what I had seen, flyweight fight between Yoni Sherbatov and Miguel Felipe Buenas da Silva. If you take a look at the notes, Buenas da Silva, he was able to get the win by flying armbar. And, you know, you don't see a lot of flying armbar wins. You know, one that definitely comes to mind is another flyweight bout, Demetrius Johnson and Ray Borg. But if you take a look on the replay, it was more or less a takedown. He kind of grabbed Sherbatov's arm as he was going down and then transitioned it into an armbar. It was a really neat submission nonetheless, but if you read it, you got to actually, you know, watch the replay rather than just read the title for sure. Saturday, we also had some premier boxing fights. Adrian Broner took on Jesse Vargas. It was a 144-pound catchweight fight. It was scored a decision win for Broner, but if you look into the strikes thrown, I think Vargas threw almost 200 more strikes than Broner did, and he landed about 10 to 15 more, so his percentage wasn't as good, but I definitely didn't agree with the decision win for Broner. I thought Vargas had the win for sure. Fight before that, we had Jermall Charlo took on Hugo Centeno. I predict that Charlo was going to get the KO, and he actually got the second round KO win, so good for him. Him and his brother are both really good boxers, close to the same in weight. They're twins, and a couple of exciting fighters for sure. And also on that card, we had Gervonta Davis taking on Jesus Cuellar. You might remember Gervonta being on the Mayweather-McGregor pay-per-view card fight before them. He was able to get the third round TKO win, and definitely a really, really good fight on that card as well. And then one that might have flown under the radar, she was featured on the panel of the press conference the day before the fights, but Bellator flyweight and boxer Heather Hardy won her eight-round fight against Iranda Paloa Torres by decision. So she became the new NABF female flyweight title holder. And she's also the current WBC women's bantamweight champ as well. So it kind of puts her in a bit of an odd position. I know there was some talk in her last fight by the commentators that potentially in Bellator she'd take part in some kickboxing matches under their banner. But she's definitely still a really good boxer, undefeated as a pro, and really exciting in that Bellator flyweight division as well. So definitely somebody to watch. You never know, maybe she goes full-time back to boxing. She focuses more on her MMA. But a really good fighter in Bellator, and a really good boxer as well. Also on Saturday, we had a separate card from the Echo Arena in Liverpool. It was Amir Khan and Phil Greco. You know, there's talk before the fight, if Khan lost, he was going to retire. And even if he won, he could possibly retire. But you could pull it up online. It was a 39-second TKO win for Khan. He came out with a flurry of punches that dropped LaGreco, and that was it. Looked really good, so you never really know what could be next for Khan. I mean, his fight before this, he had lost to Canelo by knockout. It was a clean knockout, so you never know. Let's transition over to this week's up-and-comer. So the focus of the up-and-comer, it could be a boxer, an MMA star, a kickboxer, jiu-jitsu, grappler, you name it. It's kind of not a big-name guy, but a name that some people might recognize. This week we're going to focus on Naaman Gracie, who's actually 7-0, and he's fighting this weekend against Javier Torres at Bellator 198. So he's been active as a pro since 2013. He fought in World Series of Fighting. Actually fought on a card with Justin Gaethje and Nick Newell. And he's fought also in Bellator as well. If you have a look, he fought on and off from about 2013 to 2016. And now he seemed to focus quite a bit more on fighting as a professional in Bellator. He has one decision win and six wins by submission. Most recently was against Zach Buescher, and he won by neck crank. And if you watch that fight, he was all over Buescher. Hardly any striking in that fight. He went straight for Buescher's neck, got him down to the ground, and just kept going for, you know, neck crank or rear naked. And really, really impressive win for sure. He's 6 feet tall, competing in that welterweight division. It causes a lot of problems for his opponents. You can kind of think of, you know, think of Khabib's fight against Iaquinta. Iaquinta's style had to change quite a bit because he was so worried about the takedowns from Khabib. You think of a guy, I think of a guy like Brian Ortega. I wouldn't compare Neiman Gracie's striking skills to Ortega's, but his submission skills are definitely there. He trains out of New York City with Henzo, and he's part of the family, obviously. So if you look at Ortega's record, though, it took him 10 professional fights until he actually got a knockout, and it was that win over Thiago Tavares. So Gracie's only had 7 professional fights, hasn't got a knockout yet, but you never know. It could come, and we haven't really been able to see the power yet. So definitely a guy to watch in that welterweight division for Bellator. They're champs, obviously, Rory McDonald, so I wouldn't throw him to the wolves yet and give him a championship fight if he wins his next fight, but they're definitely trying to build him up over time, which is really smart. And we've seen Bellator do this. You know, Dylan Danis, he's going to make his pro debut this weekend at Bellator 198. So we might as well get right into that. 198 in Rosemont, Illinois. Your main event is Fedor Emelianenko taking on Frank Mir in that heavyweight championship tournament. Give an early prediction now. I think if Mir's chin's all right, you know, he hasn't fought in a couple of years since his KO loss to Mark Hunt. And Fedor's last fight was against Matt Mitrione in June of last year, where it was the double knockdown, and Mitrione was able to get the win. I think Mir's going to be able to pull out the win. If he's able to use his jiu-jitsu early, it should be a quick fight for him. But you never know. I mean, Fedor's the last emperor for a reason. He always brings a good fight. If you watch the Bellator pre-shows that they have on YouTube, he's training out of Russia. He's training really, really hard with his coaches, and you know, one of his star pupils is an up-and-comer that we focused on a couple weeks ago in Vadim Nemkov. So you never know with Fedor. It could end up being a win for Fedor. Your co-mains, Emmanuel Sanchez, taking on former UFC featherweight Sam Cecilia. Actually had the opportunity to see Sam Cecilia fight in UFC Halifax, where he took on Gavin Tucker. And that was Gavin Tucker's UFC coming out party. It was kind of stopped a little bit short by Rick Glenn, his last fight. But I'm sure we'll see Tucker back in the UFC and competing. It's a really interesting fight as well for Bellator, because Sanchez is a really good fighter. And I'd like to see where Cecilia could go from here. He's competed in Bellator before since making the move from UFC, but it's a name that, you know, UFC fans, if you haven't watched a lot of Bellator, maybe didn't realize that Cecilia was competing for them. We've also got that Neiman Gracie fight against Javier Torres. Another good fight on the card. Middleweight fight on the main card. So you've got 7-0 Rafael Lovato Jr. taking on 15-3 John Salter. Lovato Jr., if you take a look at him on YouTube, he's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. Makes this event even more exciting, where you've got him and also Dylan Danis. But 15-3 John Salter, like I said, he has some videos also available on Bellator's YouTube page to take a look at. But I definitely take Lovato Jr. early in this fight, just where he's a world-class grappler and jiu-jitsu practitioner, and 7-0 record as well. So really interesting fight in that middleweight division. And then, like I was saying, could have been my featured up-and-comer for this week, but 0-0 is a pro Dylan Danis, taking on 2-4 Kyle Walker. So they're not throwing Danis to the wolves early. If I could compare him to anybody, I'd actually compare him to Mackenzie Dern in the UFC, because if you're not aware, he's a jiu-jitsu practitioner, competes in a lot of jiu-jitsu competitions, and he's world-class for sure. So taking on the 2-4 Kyle Walker, for this camp, he's trained with SBG in Ireland. That's obviously Connor's gym with John Kavanaugh as the head coach. And from what I've read, it was reported that Danis actually paid McGregor's bail a few weeks ago there in New York City. So good friends, already part of the team, and really trying to work on his striking skills. training with SBG for sure. So it should be a really good fight. I'm sure we're gonna see a submission, at least by Danis, and most likely a win. So really, really important fight for sure. And from what I've read, it should be on the Bellator main card as well, so on the Paramount Network. On Friday, there's LFA 38 from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Main event's going to be a heavyweight title fight between 8-1 champ Jeff Hughes and 5-1 Maurice Green. If you look through Hughes' record, in his last two fights, he's won by decision. And Green's won his last three. And the last two of those three, he won by submission. Fight before that, he won by knockout. So should be a good fight for sure. A couple guys with some really good records in LFA, and they always put on a good show. There's also going to be Cage Warriors 93 on Saturday from Gothenburg, Sweden. Main event's Nicholas Dalby taking on Carlo Pedersoli. And I'll focus more on that card as well coming up on Friday. We'll break it down a little bit more than just the main event, but just to give you an idea of what's coming up this weekend. And then there's also some boxing fights, and again, I'll focus more on Friday. But HBO Boxing on Saturday, you got Jacobs and Selecki. And there's also Fox Premier Boxing Champions live on Saturday between Lopez and Cruz. And Cruz is actually 16-0, so somebody you should watch. So that just about does it for episode 4 of Fight Night Picks podcast. We went over Greg Hardy joining the Contender Series in June, the events from this past weekend, the events coming up this weekend, and the up-and-comer that you should watch who's actually fighting this weekend, Neiman Gracie. So we'll see you later on Friday. I'll make my picks. And like I said, I'll give you a more in-depth look at the fights coming up this weekend. Thanks.